Welcome to the Text and Tech Podcast with Tamara Vaughan.
Meet my daughter. This is...
Karis Graham.
And how old are you?
I'm 11.
What grade are you in?
I'm going into grade 6 this September.
And do you know what we're doing here?
Nope.
Before I start my interview with Karis, my daughter, I'm going to give you a bit of a backstory with her. We knew fairly early on that our daughter was smart, switched on, and quite observant. She was speaking full and complex sentences well before her first birthday. But what seemed obvious to us simply did not transfer into school. When written text was placed in front of her, or if she wanted to write something herself, it was like there was a different kid in the room. Stand up in front of a room full of adults and opine on the relative merits of this TV show versus that one, she could do that easily. Talk on the phone with grandma, not a problem. Paint a picture full of sadness or joy? Absolutely. Build a playset from her toys that told a story worthy of an epic film? Every single day. But letters and numbers would not come. In this podcast, I'm exploring the ways different modes of communication reveal and enable different aspects of ourselves. With our daughter, it's clear that her learning difficulties, her different wiring, only becomes an issue when she's confronted with different kinds of communication tech. In this case, the alphabet. It's not that she has some sort of absence or disability. It only exists when that particular tech, and the alphabet is a technology, is present. It's the technology that does the disabling. When I reflect on my eTech 540 journey, starting with oral storytelling at the beginning of the course, moving steadily through history to our current use and perhaps fear of artificial intelligence, when it came time to decide on my final project, I wanted to find an idea that would allow me to really dig into what I've learned, something creative where I could compare or contrast different modes of communication. As I reviewed our notes, it was staring me right in the face. In modules 6 and 7, we started exploring the emergence of visual text in Bolter's 2001 piece, Writing Space, Computers, Hypertext, and the Remediation of Print, and the concept of multimodality and multiliteracies in the New London Group's 1996 article, A Pedagogy of Multiliteracies, Designing Social Futures. These two pieces kicked off my idea of a project related to the different modes of communication we've examined this term. Specifically, though, within the course notes in section 7.1 on digital literacy, I found this little gem describing Dobson and Walensky's perception of digital literacy and its similarity to McLuhan's. McLuhan's idea that the content of any new medium is an older medium. Digital literacy is not positioned as standing in opposition to print. It is part of a continuum in technologies for knowledge diffusion across which we can observe signs of the remaking of old relationships under new conditions of digital and global network cultures. There it was, my idea. I wanted to examine the continuum of text or storytelling technologies to determine how knowledge is transmitted or acquired, and whether that acquisition is dependent upon the way in which a message is conveyed from one person to another. Does the mode of communication make a difference? That's what I was curious to find out. As an educator, I have read the New London Group's 1996 paper on multiliteracies and multimodalities many times before. I am also very well aware of McLuhan's famous supposition from his 1964 article, Understanding Media, The Extensions of Man, in which he suggests that the way in which a message is conveyed, or the communication medium, rather than the message, is what's important, or that the medium is the message. But is it? And further, how could I come up with a relatively simple experiment or test to evaluate whether this was the case using technology that didn't even exist when McLuhan uttered those famous words? I found my answer in a paper written in 1948 by the father of information theory, Claude Shannon. In his groundbreaking paper, A Mathematical Theory of Communication, Shannon attempts to mathematically determine whether you could construct a universal theory of communication that could allow perfect communication. Shannon's paper is quite mathematical, far beyond my capabilities and the scope of this project. However, I found an interview with Shannon that was extremely helpful in helping me gain perspective on what I was trying to achieve with my daughter, Karis. In it, Shannon says, "My first thinking about information theory was how you best improve information transmission over a noisy channel. This was a specific problem where you're thinking about a telegraph system or a telephone system. In my experiment, though, the noisy channel is the brain, and I wanted to see how meaning is constructed based on the use of specific media. How does a message or signal get relayed to its endpoint despite the noisy channel in between? And are some modes of communication cleaner or less noisy than others for Karis? We started my little experiment with oral storytelling, or in this case, oral instructions. Karis's strength or her gift is in her ability to understand and process oral forms of communication. That's why we started with this one. Explaining the task orally was super easy, to the point where she didn't even realize she'd completed the first task.
So what we're going to do here is I'm going to give you a series of tasks or questions, and I'm going to present it to you in different ways. And I need you to, because we're recording, you're going to need to have to say the questions or talk about it out loud so that we can record it. So the very
Are they going to be math?
No, they're going to be fairly straightforward.
So once the instructions were done and dusted, we progressed to simple text on my computer screen. I deliberately chose Arial, which you'll see and you'll note that Karis picked up on right away. It's an easy-to-read font, so that way I was able to distinguish this task from the following one.
But why is it an Arial instead of, like, a handwriting font so it looks like you've been actually writing it by hand?
Good question. I did that intentionally. I wanted to choose a font that looked, that was very, very easy for you to read and very straightforward because, well, it'll become apparent shortly. So can you read that aloud and tell us what, well, just read it aloud. Let's start with that.
Child of mine? Shouldn't you have said that? Oh, but okay. Would you kindly list for me your top 5 books of all time? Well, I don't have top 5 books at all.
What about series?
Nope, because I love all books.
I should have known not to ask questions about Karis's favorite books. Lesson learned. But you can see, provided the text is clean and simple, the noise is reduced and the message is easily conveyed to Karis. In the next task, I asked Karis to read a sentence my mother wrote for her in cursive. My mother's handwriting is like art. It's beautiful. I find it quite easy to read, but perhaps that's a result of decades of practice. For Karis, this was the first time I noticed that the message, or part of it, might be getting lost. Reading cursive writing is quite challenging for Karis. Her processing disability, and I'm using air quotes, is related to processing text and in writing text as well. You can hear her struggling with specific words.
Dearest granddaughter, using crochet, could you something stitch a row for me? Oh, using a crochet needle thing, could you something stitch a row for me? Sincerely, Pamela G. Fawn.
So you can see that this is a difficult task for Karis. This is a great example of the increase in noise between the signal, my mom's writing, and Karis's ability to process the message. The next task is a fun one. I present Karis with a series of emoji. She has to translate.
Music? I don't really like... I'm not good at music or I don't like music. Not allowed. I have a full face. That's
okay.
What it looks like, but it doesn't make sense to me because I'm not good with pictures.
I found her response to this task particularly interesting. She nearly decoded the message at the very start, but perhaps she second-guessed herself. Was it the noise, the mode of communication, or the lack of context that caused her to pause? According to Karis, it's because she's not good with pictures. I found that to be a really cool observation. The final task proved to be quite a frustrating one for Karis. I presented the submission I used for our mode-bending task in which I created a sonification. She wasn't pleased.
What is the message in the music? What is it conveying to you?
I have no idea because the music to me makes no bit of sense. It's like, I get it's happy, but pieces like that, I know some people think in music and think in notes, but I just think in words, like letters, and I think in scenes. And so this made no emotional or mental or physical impact on me whatsoever.
So what was really interesting about this was that Karis made the observation that this was kind of beyond the scope of how she thinks, and that she thinks in letters and words and scenes, and that she perhaps just doesn't have the schema or the context in which to understand the message being conveyed in music. So how did my little experiment go? Was there too much noise preventing a message from being conveyed? Was it the mode itself that caused the breakdown in communication? It's hard to say. Karis admitted that language-based communication is her strength. However, does that mean she is not capable of communicating through images or music? And how does her disability fit into all of this? In disability studies, we know that technologies often do the disabling, and for Karis, that technology is language, is text. Though here she demonstrated strength in some of the language or text-based tasks. My next task would be to unpack some of the noise we observed during this project to see if there are better ways of getting closer to obtaining Shannon's perfect communication. Thank you for listening. This podcast is a sample of what a longer series would seek to explore and uncover. Think of this 10-minute snippet as a trailer, teaser, or abstract for what would be a longer series. Information concerning this podcast, including background information, references, and show notes, can be found by clicking on the final project link on my blog at blogs.ubc.ca/Vaughan, VAUGHAN/.